Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Blue Moon. That can only mean one thing. You're listening to the Manchester City Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with the Man City Show podcast. We're back. It's the new year, the new decade, but the team stays the same. It is the brilliant, the legend, Nigel Rothman and David Hodgson to leave us here into the next hour talking everything where City are concerned. And what a show we have for you. So much to talk about. We're going to be talking about that busy festive period, looking at the games that took place over Christmas and the new year, looking towards that game with Man United in the week, the massive League Cup semi-final. I know Nigel doesn't call him Man United, so even when I just said it then, he gave me a look. It may be a new decade, but he hasn't changed. I just got the evil eye. We'll talk about the brilliant win beating Port Vale on the weekend, and our City will look to defend that trophy. Obviously, City winning every domestic honour last season. They'll look to hold on to some of those, but can they hold on to their Premier League title? It's a question that is still following them. Then delighted to say David Walker at 9:30 will be joining us from Red But Never Red, so please stay around for that. But David may be joining us, and we'll also have Ryan Butler, a sports journalist, to talk about Man United if Nigel allows us to speak to him, if we can give him a little bit of airtime. But more importantly, you can join us and you can have your say. Tweet us at Love Sport Radio or call us 0208 7020 558. Nigel, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Charlie. Good to be back.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm really good. Great to be back.
Great to have you back.
Yeah?
Yeah. You sort of said it like I'm
well, I don't know. You know, I'm not allowed to call them what I don't call them. And
No, you can. I just thought I'd be polite and okay. be the impartial one sitting on the fence, even though you know where my loyalties lie.
I do, really. But we're not going to share that tonight. No.
We're not going to share it tonight. Always a pleasure to have you back and to have you, David. How have you been?
No, I can't complain. I've got a bit of worries going into the new year. It might be the year that I never thought we'd see, the year that Liverpool actually win the Premier League. I'd always told myself this day had never come, but I'm worried.
Yeah, that's something I don't think anyone needs or wants. So I thought I was on a yellow card, you know, by calling Man United. But you saying that, David, you may have, you know, with VAR have had a look, because now we do go to the screen on the side of the pitch, and you may have got a yellow, David. But let's get into that then. Obviously, you've slipped somewhat further behind Liverpool due to their continuing brilliance, we have to say, in City. Obviously, Wolves doing the double over them this year. Another slip up to them. VAR again playing its part. But Nigel, not just that Wolves game, the Wolves game, the games overall, what have you made of them?
Well, listen, we as you say, Charlie, we've moved further behind, and of course the thing we have to say is you've got to give credit to Liverpool. Let's be straightforward about this. They are kind of the Manchester City of last season or the season before. You know, they look unbeatable, to be fair. They're going on this run. I can't see anybody beating them. They're not dropping any points at all, and it's looking very likely now that they're going to win their first ever Premier League title. It's a long time in coming. But I think it's going to take a miracle, isn't it, now for City to sort of make that gap up. Having said that, you know, listen, we're still in three other cup competitions. Mathematically, it's still possible, and I think we're still putting in some good performances. And it's nice to see some of the younger players getting a chance. I guess we'll get onto that later in the show. But yeah, I think we can honestly say that we have to give the league up now and focus on other things, which we can do.
Yeah, really interesting, because I want to talk about how, I don't want to say City have turned a small corner, you know, beating Everton, beating Sheffield United, but really professional performances. But David, it feels so odd and so strange. Maybe it's just me, maybe I'm in that minority, but when Nigel says got to give the league up, and you know they're going on, it's a long time in coming, it is only January, and this is sport. Anything can happen. Need a miracle. Miracles do happen sometimes in sport. Can you write off the Premier League title just yet?
I think I can. You know, I would say, I'd say every step of the season, you know, the question we've had to ask ourselves is, if Liverpool, you know, can you see a situation in which Liverpool drop more points than Manchester City? You know, when that was, you know, October and we were talking 7 or 8 points, I was struggling to see it because, you know, we had started the season in such a way, ropey at the back, scoring goals but not scoring enough to offset that. You know, Liverpool have just been, you know, it's like, you know, the Centurion season for us. You know, they've dropped points in one game all season in Premier League. you can't see them. You can see them, I can see them dropping a lot more than that before the end. Can I see them dropping more points than us? No. Can I see them dropping 14 more than us? I definitely can't. You know, it's very difficult to see how that goes. And to be honest, I think our best chance of making this season a success is to accept that, to work out, reorient the priorities. You know, you've got three other trophies up for grabs, well, two and a half. And, you know, one of them is something that, you know, one of them in particular is the perhaps the thing that we that's been missing from, you know, the Abu Dhabi revolution at City, from, you know, and indeed from Guardiola's, you know, last year since he left Barcelona. So I think that's an interesting one. I think that's how they've got to make this a success now.
Yeah, obviously we know of City's chase and hunt for the Champions League and Guardiola, everything's made of that, him trying to achieve that at City. Is there a worry or maybe a concern, Nigel, that anytime you do, I don't want to say get desperate for something, you chase one lone thing and you put all the eggs in one basket, it sort of becomes harder to obtain?
I think the Champions League is always going to be hard to obtain anyway, Charlie, because it's a cup competition and anything can happen.
Of the Europe's elite.
Well, sure, exactly. You're not, you know, you're playing. You're always going to be playing against good sides, and we got Real Madrid in the round of 16.
Easy.
No mugs. They've won it once or twice.
A couple of times. Yeah.
They know how to win it, don't they? So it's going to be difficult, and it's not like the Premier League, where the generally speaking the best team at the end of the season is going to win that. It's not always the case in the Champions League. So that's always going to be difficult. And in terms of our chances this season, you just look at the way we've played in the Premier League, you look at the injuries we've had and the adjustments we've had to make and this transition that we're going through as well as a team, as well as older players are just kind of, you know, you think of the David Silvers of this world and we've got the wonderful Phil Foden coming through to take his place, but we are going through a transition as a club, and that always gives you issues, and therefore as a result of that I think it is going to be very difficult. We're not at our best, we're not firing on all cylinders, and I think it's going to be difficult this season. We may do it, as I say, get a good run, get the rub of the green, and anything's possible.
Well, anything is impossible, especially in sport. You're not at your best at the minute. So some would say they want to win the Champions League. They're not at the best. They're not performing at the City heights that they can do. Champions League may be out of the question, but, you know, Spurs not great in the league and got to a European Cup final, albeit didn't win it. But it shows it can be done, can't it, David?
It does, and, you know, it's not always the best team that goes all the way to the final. You know, I think...
Luck of the draw as well, a little bit.
There is a little bit of that in play. But, you know, there's a few things that change between now and when we play Real Madrid. So we play Real Madrid, I think it's mid-February. Laporte might not be back in time, but he might be. That will change a few things. You know, as I've been through before, Laporte, as a left-footed centre-half, offers better protection to our left-back, which has been a real weak point for us so far this season. It frees up Fernandinho, who's, you know, experienced in holding midfield in difficult games. It changes quite a few different things going further up the pitch, and I think that's going to be something that really helps us going into that game. There's also, and, you know, there's been a few, you know, I don't like to get involved in the transfer market rumour mill. You've seen quite a bit more sort of... gossip today about who City might go for, whether they're scoping out centre-back targets, you know, left-back targets, a couple of, you know, things might do in midfield. Yeah, there's just a few different things out there. It could well be that Guardiola looks to tighten up a couple of things going into that Champions League game. Maybe just to bring back a little bit more of that balance, that equilibrium that we've been looking for this season. Because too many things have been shifting. Some of that's natural due to players aging. You know, you've seen, you know, Jesus maybe taking a more active role with Aguero, you know, as Nigel mentioned, you know, Foden coming in a bit more for David Silva and Bernardo Silva moving to the centre. You know, Fernandinho's had to cover for Laporte in a place he probably would have had company, and in turn Rodrigo's had to backfill Fernandinho. That's a lot of flux for a team to have. And with someone like Benjamin Mendy coming back in at left back, maybe not getting the protection he would from the centre half, you've got a lot of change in that team. And if there's, you know, little factors that are stopping things not working the way they should be, you know, having to play two right-footed centre-halves or a centre-half out of position, that's going to make that transition even more difficult. So it may well be that looking at the way the Champions League is going to go and the importance that now takes, getting some players in might be what he needs to do.
Well, getting those players in, always looking towards the youth. We done that, didn't we? We looked at City's strengths, weaknesses, and we looked about the players that were in the old guard and sort of maybe towards the end of the career. You just mentioned Silva there. The youngsters coming through, they got them in before the Silvers were ready to depart for some pastures new. Also today, in the last couple of days, we're hearing news that Man City are expected to sign Kilmarnock teenager Liam Smith. What have you made of this? Do you know much about him, Nigel, David? Have you heard about this? No.
No, I have to be honest, I really haven't. I haven't. And I'm not, like David, I'm not sure if I believe the rumour mill. I think City have said that probably January is not going to be the time to go into the market. It's always a difficult time to buy. Not the right people are available. Often it's inflated prices. And it may well be they've made the decision actually that the summer is the time to really make those changes. Whether one or two come in, that's very possible. But as David says, you know, we have got players coming back. We have got a good squad. And there may be one or two coming in. I haven't heard that. I can't confirm that. I don't know. Whether others can comment, I'm not sure. But I've not heard that.
No. Well, they're looking towards that next generation. They always are. Before we look at that Port Vale game, obviously, when you've set such a high bar, set such a high standard, you know, City winning all the domestic trophies last season, you know, Pep Guardiola, long touted as the greatest manager currently managing, you know, any time that you have a season like City having, you know, made the knockout stage of Champions League, still in the cups, you know, obviously not top of the Premier League, but they're up there. People go, oh, it's not a great year for them. We hear the word maybe, has this been a failure for City? And it's so crazy to say by those standards failure. But for you two, has it been maybe somewhat of a silly failure?
No. Is the honest answer, because you have to understand that we won four Premier League titles in 7 years. As you've already said, we hold all four domestic trophies. We've already won a Community Shield already. We're about to go into a semi-final to get into the final of the Carabao Cup that we now own, of course. Potentially going to win that 3 years on the trot. It's ridiculous to start suggesting that Manchester City is a failure or Pep Guardiola is a failure. Mm. We've had some issues. We have been operating at such high levels the last couple of seasons. And yeah, we've dropped off that a bit. We've had a bit of a wobble. But it's certainly not a failure. You just look at some of the football that we can play, and yeah, to not win against Newcastle and Norwich and Wolves and so on, you can look at that, and yeah, that's disappointing, and those are the wobbles I'm talking about. But it's certainly not a failure. It's not a word I would use to describe Manchester City. And I think Pep was actually challenged, wasn't he, of course, in a press conference, when a journalist kind of put it to him, and I thought his response was absolutely fantastic when he said, do you know what, yeah, that year when I'd won six trophies in the season, everything's been a failure since then. And that's probably how it feels. We won all four domestic trophies. Where do you go from there, Charlie?
Yeah.
Well, you know, win five out of the four? Is that maybe what people are looking for?
Yes.
You know, it's listen, let's be sensible. Let's be realistic. He's a fantastic manager. We've got a superb squad. And we are playing some fantastic football. You know, well done, Liverpool. They've got better. We have had some challenges, we've had some injuries, we've had to make some adjustments, but it is far from being a failure.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Not just silly season when it comes to rumours and transfer meal, you know, rumours when we're talking about Guardiola and what they're doing there. Everyone has a down year. They're still, you know, the ultimate heavyweight at the minute in the Premier League. Just quickly though, and I'm sure you've covered it to death on your show, but we have had a few weeks off. What, you know, it's not just changes on the playing side of the staff. Arteta, you know, Guardiola's number two, now leaving to be full-time head coach, manager, however the terminology they use now, at Arsenal. Obviously, there was a little bit of, not foul play between the club, saying they weren't announcing it, then they were announcing it. Regardless of that, he has gone. Guardiola obviously saw a lot in him, wanted him to stay. I don't want to say, is this a big loss to the setup, but what have you made of it and the City fans made of this, David?
I mean, you never really know quite what the division of labour is within a camp like this. What I would say is the replacement for Arteta, Rodolfo Borrell, is a long-standing Pep acolyte. He's been a, you know, key part of his staff at Barcelona as well. Very instrumental in the development of players like Messi. He's been around Guardiola for so long, been part of the coaching staff, been part of the training setup each day. It's not like we're having to bring in someone in, you know, completely fresh face to jump into that role. It's someone who's part of the squad. There's going to be enough flex in that coaching staff to cope with that Arteta. And maybe, you know, he looks to bring on some kind of new prodigy next, Pablo Zabaleta. And, you know, that's the next stage. But in the meantime, there's enough flex in that coaching staff to adequately replace Arteta. And best of luck to him at Arsenal.
Nigel?
I think David's made the point. I think it's, you look at the backroom staff. You know, it's no longer the days where it's a manager and his assistant, and there's a bloke with a bucket who happens to be the physio, and there's three of them that sat on the bench. That's what I grew up on. Now you've got a whole army of people. There are many grounds we go to; they can't all fit in the dugout. You know,
yeah,
they
have
to. You know, so I mean, there's a pretty big backroom staff there, and they've all worked together. They all work very closely together. I think the other thing to remember is, of course, the key person here in Pep Guardiola hasn't gone anywhere. He's still there. He's, I'm sure, still the main voice, the main man, the people look to. He's the one who's setting the agenda. He's the one who's motivating the players. And I think, as Dave has already said, I think there's a good support network around. And listen, Arteta goes with our blessing. We've won everything with him. And obviously, I think all City fans would wish him well.
Wish him well. Well, obviously, the key man has stayed, and that is Pep. And they started the FA campaign against Port Vale, and that got off to a bright start. And we're going to be talking about that next. Love Sport. You are listening to the Manchester City Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, joined in the studio with Nigel Rothman and David Hodgson. And let me tell you, it may be a new year and a new decade, but some things never change. And we've got a hat trick there. One, you can still get in touch. You can still be part of this show. You tweet us at Love Sport Radio. You call us 0208 7020 558. And unbelievably, for the last 6 months, Nigel still can't get rid of that cough, so that hasn't changed. And then just in the break there, he's doing a crossword or a Sudoku. I can't keep him company enough in 90 seconds. I just can't, sustain his attention. But here we are. We're back talking City. Unbelievable. All he's missing is a 3 and a 6, and that Sudoku is complete. Let's talk about now the Port Vale on the weekend. Obviously, not the hard now he's smashing up the studio. I mean, this man is just no respect. Also, talking of no respect, on the weekend, it was Port Vale. Obviously, not the strongest of opposition, but a lot was made with Mr. Pope and John Stones scored one. There was a little bit of banter. They invited the players into the dressing room after. John Stones wasn't the happiest. What do you make of this, Nigel?
I think City handled it really, really well. I'm not going to talk about Mr. Pope because there have been other tweets that have been tweeted and deleted, and I don't really want to go there. But as far as Manchester City concerned, I think they do these things really, really well. You know, here's Port Vale. You could see the lads asking for shirts in the sort of the last few minutes.
100%.
And you'd do that, wouldn't you? And I think to invite them in and Pep with a manager and a glass of red wine and all that stuff. We do that stuff really, really well, and the selfies and so on. And I'm sure the Port Vale players, you know, League Two, coming to the Etihad, playing against. And of course, the other good thing, of course, is City and Pep respect these cup competitions. You know, you look at the lineup that we had. Sure, there were a few youngsters coming in.
Strong lineup,
but a strong lineup. A serious lineup, you know, with Aguero started. You look
we do have to add, though. I mean, I always say this about a strong lineup, and I go, well, their whole squad's strong. I mean, it's hard when you go strong lineup. I mean, it's very hard not to be strong, you know.
Sure, but you know, he can still make 9 changes. He doesn't have to make 3 or 4, I guess, is the point I'm making, Charlie. He could easily have made a lot more changes
easily
and played many more youngsters, and he didn't. He chose to respect the competition, respect Port Vale, and you've got to give them credit as well. I mean, they came back at us, and you know, they got back to 1-1. In the end, I don't think we ever looked like losing the game. But going back to your original question, I think City handle the thing pretty well, as they do in all of these situations. It's a pretty good machine.
Yeah, they certainly do, always with a touch of class. Mendy was definitely enjoying it, trying to wind up Stones, though, and getting Pope involved. But it did go to 1-1. Was there any danger, David? Did you get a little bit worried and think, oh, cup upset here?
No. I mean, you know, it was one of those. It's one of those goals that annoys me because, you know, certainly with the memories of the time when City were playing in the lower leagues, you know, those are the sort of crosses that you expect your fullbacks to be dealing with, you expect them to be cutting out, and you expect your centre-halves to be stronger. You know, Pope's an experienced striker who's been playing for, you know, I think 15 years in you know, in Football League.
He's a natural goal scorer, regardless of the level of football
he plays.
He
knows how to win headers, and, you know, he got the wrong side of Harwood Bellis, who's, of course, very young, still, you know, learning how to you know, how to deal with these sort of wilier strikers. He, you know, that was a bit worrying. But look, you know, we had some real quality in that squad. You know, Phil Foden had an absolute blinder. He's, you know, showing that he can not only contribute but lead. You know, there's a definite lead by example in him. He's getting that little bit more. He's always been energetic, but he's become a bit more physical with it, and you could really see that in the game. The way he was moving around, the way he was sort of, you know, feeling confident to keep drifting, get hold of the ball, you know, keep moving it on, keep moving it forward. He was very impressive, you know, and you know, we had Howard Bellis, who had a decent game apart from being a little suspect on the goal. And you had Tommy Doyle, who is a youngster especially dear to City fans of a certain vintage, Nigel. And
well, just to be clear, and I'm sure you know this as well, but you know, his grandparents are two City legends. I mean, that is something special. And I remember both Glyn Pardo and Mick Doyle playing in the side of the late 60s.
I thought you were going to say you remember their birth.
I was there as well. Yeah. So those two guys were City legends in that team that won everything the previous team before the money came in, and of course to think that those two have produced a grandson who
it is crazy.
It's a fantastic. And the other thing, of course, Dave, is that we had three City fans playing in the sky blue shirts. Not guys who were born in and around, but these are genuine fans who stood on the terraces and support the club and have done from childhood. So that's really special as well, to have guys like that sort of playing on the pitch. And
one other thing to mention here, you know, if you think about the sort of timeline on this, all these boys are about 18, 19. You think, what, so we were bought out 11, 12 years ago now, 11 and a half years ago. They'll have been joining the academy about that time, and you can just see the quality of player, the way the mentality has changed, and the investment we've been putting into those young players is really paying dividends. Because, you know, we have this fantastic youth setup in the mid-noughties of Jim Cassell, you know, Sean Wright Phillips, Ned Manua, Micah Richards, Stephen Ireland, Michael Johnson. You have these great players coming through that system.
Unbelievably ruled off by you there, David. Superb.
He, you know, well, this is my childhood, man. Yeah. You know, these are the boyhood heroes. Well, Sean Goater is boyhood hero, but, you know, they played second fiddle.
Yeah, feed the goat and he will score.
Big part of childhood. And, you know, he went, and we had a bit of a you know, weaker spell. Few sort of false dawns. No one really came through, got the fans excited. But this investment is clearly shown. We've got this pipeline of players, and it's not just these players we've bought from other academies who are coming through. These are homegrown lads who are turning out to be potential, not just players who might about make it, players who can come into our first team and actually make an impact. And that is just so good to see. It's really good to see that not just are we the side coming in, buying stuff, ruining football. We're investing in our local, you know, local schools, local players, and getting them to a point where they can make an impact on the first team.
And another youngster, of course, that we have that didn't actually get on at the weekend but was on the bench was Eric Garcia, who has had a number of starts and looks very accomplished at centre-back. You know, looks as though he's been playing there for years. And so there's kind of a fourth one, if you like, in this kind of team of youngsters. So I think it's really encouraging as City fans to see these guys coming through and Pep giving them a chance. And the beauty is, of course, being in four competitions, that I think he will use these guys. And I suspect, as we've said, as with the Premier League kind of pretty much gone, it kind of gives him an opportunity to allow these players to play probably some more, I would have thought, and just keep the first team squad, if you like, fresh and be able to rotate that. So I suspect we'll see more of these guys playing, not just in cup competitions and cup games, but actually in some of the league games as well, potentially.
I have to ask Nigel, just on Eric Garcia quickly, because I think he's a fantastic player. I think he's got all the technical abilities. You know, he's really competent on the ball. Do you think at 5'11" and with his certain deficit of pace that you could say he has he got enough to really last as a Premier League centre-back? Or does Pep need to consider where might be a better place to put him?
Listen, Pep will know, I guess. But as far as what I've seen so far, and we haven't seen a lot of him, I've been really encouraged by what I've seen with him. Yes, he is not the tallest. I think he looks strong on the ball. I think he can see a pass and make a pass. He can play out from the back, good with his feet, which of course is important to Pep. Listen, it's early days yet, and I think an interesting question, and maybe it's a question we can put to David later on, is how many of these guys can actually make it? And that's a question I've got in my mind. I mean, it's great now, but how many of them really will make it? I suspect we'll all say that Phil Foden has absolutely got everything he needs. He's already showing that quality. People are already talking about him, and he should be involved with England in the Euros and so on, and he's just a shoo-in for that, and certainly the manager should be taking a good hard look and getting him involved. How many of the others will make it long term? I'm not sure, and it's a good question. And of course, as far as Pep's concerned, I mean, he might play in goal, he might play right back, he might play him as a striker. He does that with players, doesn't he? I don't know. I'm joking, of course, about that. But yeah, not convinced necessarily about what his long term future will be. Of that group, Foden's absolutely nailed on certainty. The others, I guess, the jury's out.
Yeah, it's a really good point. Who and which players will make that grade? David Walker will be talking to us all about that in just a second. But quickly, even though this is the City Fan Show, I'd like to talk about football's biggest talking points from a City perspective. One of the big questions we've been asking on Love Sport at the minute, has the FA Cup lost its magic, lost its sparkle? Obviously, certain fans will say yes. It doesn't quite mean what it means to certain clubs anymore. Not just Premier League clubs, you know, Championship clubs who are gunning for promotion or trying to stay in their own division. But you mentioned it there. Pep completely paid respect to the competition, as it should be. But has there lost a little bit of its magic? And is the romance slightly dying in this cup competition, this prestigious cup competition we have, Nigel?
I think it probably has. I don't think it has from a Manchester City point of view. We've made that point already. Pep completely gets it and respects it. I think there are other Premier League teams that don't, and that clearly has an impact. I mean, Port Vale bought, 8,000 fans to the Etihad, so certainly they saw it as being their cup final, I suppose you could argue. And other teams, if you're fighting for survival and you want to stay in the Premier League or it's desperate to get that promotion slot and go up a league, then of course you can understand why managers might well prioritise other competitions for the FA Cup. And as a result, does that mean it's lost its sparkle? Yeah. I think another thing I would throw into the mix is something I really dislike are semi-finals at Wembley. I don't think that's helped us at all. And it's no longer... having the Wembley final is something really special. Why do we go to... So when you've got two northern clubs playing the FA Cup semi-final and it's in Wembley... It makes no sense to me at all.
Makes no sense, not just for the fans travelling down, which is an absolute hardship and nonsense for them, but the whole point, and it was when David, you know, he was reeling off those players. That was his childhood. For me, you always learn, you know, when you was young, you know, it wasn't just winning the FA Cup. Of course it is, but you go, we've reached Wembley. You have got to Wembley. The prize, obviously, is the FA Cup, but the prize is playing here at the National Stadium. Exactly. And if you are a Port Vale or whoever, and this is no disrespect, we're getting here, we're playing here. Unbelievable. It does make no sense. But of course, it's all about money and what they can make. It's ridiculous, though.
We know the reasons, but I think it's just another factor that yes, it's the money that I've said that is clubs involved in staying up, getting promotion. And I guess the only other thing I'd say finally on this is the fact that with the big teams like Manchester City and some of the other Premier, you know, that winning the Premier League is ultimately the most important thing, and that kind of trumps everything. And then, of course, we've got the Champions League as well to consider as well, and I guess both of those things trump both of those.
So you've got sort of, in terms of what we see from the FA Cup, we know that there's a bit of a financial disparity that's growing and growing in football, and you can really see that with some of these games. So some of these clubs know, you know, that the money's based on doing well in Premier League, Champions League, FA Cup doesn't really matter, off it goes. Two things that might be interesting to reform it, maybe make it a little bit better. When you get a tie like, you know, Manchester City versus Port Vale, make it hosted by the larger club and all the ticket revenues go to the smaller club. And also put a Champions League place at the end of the FA Cup. You'll see a lot of teams all of a sudden taking it very seriously. And you'll also start to see, you know, maybe, you know, these Berries, these Macclesfield Towns, these clubs that are really struggling for money. If you have those games giving them that little bit extra, that could really start to matter.
Doesn't that weaken, as you know, our standing? Because they always talk about the coefficiency points and how, you know, that's how we get four places in the Champions League because the clubs reach a certain level. If Macclesfield or Port Vale, for some reason, go on and win the FA Cup, and we've seen big, you know, stories like this, and this is, again, no disrespect, you can say, well, they won the FA Cup, what are they going to do in the Champions League? You know, one crazy, it wouldn't help in the long run, would it, Nigel?
I don't think it would, and I disagree with David also. I think the whole idea, the whole beauty, and one of the amazing, fascinating, brilliant things about the FA Cup is the draw. And you know that Bury are going to play Manchester City at home, and they're going to have to sort of think about how they're going to fit all those people in and the excitement in the town to suddenly say, well, sorry, Bury, actually, you're going to have to go to the Etihad. Just takes all
no,
that
I don't think you just get the money.
You can make it a choice. They can opt to have it at the other club's ground where it's bigger and take the ticket revenues.
No, you love it when you go, we can only get 200 tickets here. It's brilliant.
Exactly.
We've got a stand on the shed. It's unbelievable. They've got a hill in the corner of the stand.
Exactly.
It's fantastic.
Bring on the hill. Get on that hill.
Bring on the hill. I will die on that hill. But the FA Cup has lost a bit of its magic. But I'm delighted to say David Walcott will be joining us next. Love Sport. You're listening to the Manchester City Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with a Man City Show podcast. Me, Charlie Hawkins, Nigel Rothband and David Hodgson in the studio with me. But now, well, the show is a bumper one. It is a special one. We couldn't ask anyone else on it. It's the first show of the new year and the first show of the decade. What better way to be joined by David Walker, red but never red. David, always a pleasure to get you on and hear what you have to say of the season so far. Nigel saying, well, maybe the Premier League is out of it. We're out of it now. We can't quite catch Liverpool, but going full guns in the Champions League and the FA Cup. City tonight were drawn in the fourth round. They got Fulham. What did you make of that draw, David?
That's a cracking draw for us. Home draws are always great, and no disrespect to Fulham. You've got to take City to win that one and get through to the fifth round. And obviously, we want to defend the FA Cup as we want to defend the League Cup.
David, we've been talking about City's youngsters here, and obviously we talked about the victory against Port Vale in the FA Cup and four of them kind of in the squad. Your thoughts, David, about that and kind of how that's going to progress as the season goes on, and what sort of chance do you think these guys are going to get over the next few, bearing in mind we're in all four competitions? What sort of chances, and who do you think is going to sort of, which cream is going to rise to the top, do you reckon?
Sure. I know you guys mentioned it earlier. Obviously, Phil Foden, he's the man. He's the talisman. Earmarked, I presume, to take over from David Silva, given that he's obviously got youth on his side. And if he's going to get a chance, it has to be when David's gone. So I think he's nailed on. I heard the discussion about Eric Garcia. I think he's nailed on, notwithstanding the fact that he's not the biggest and he's not the fastest. But I think we've mentioned before on this programme, Pep had Carlos Puyol, not the biggest, not the fastest, and he was a world beater. And the thing with Garcia, he's got an immense footballing brain, and I understand, could be wrong, he's already looking at taking some coaching badges, which, if true, is absolutely phenomenal when the kid's, what, 18 years old. Tommy Doyle and Taylor Harwood-Bellis, they are not quite at the standing of Foden and Garcia. They are younger, but they've got great, great promise. Doyle's got great pedigree, obviously, and Harwood-Bellis is a blue through and through, so that warms the cockles. And there's plenty others in the EDS who, in the fullness of time, might get a showing, particularly Morgan Rogers. If you remember, I think City acquired from West Bromwich Albion for about £8 million, so there must be something in there waiting to get out, but probably not this season and probably not even next, but... No, it's looking good on the front with the youngsters.
And talking about this season then, Dave, in terms of the players that you've mentioned, who do you think are the ones that are going to sort of rack up a number of more sort of first-team appearances?
Foden, obviously. There's the rotation needed for Cup and League. I know the Premier League's gone, sadly, but equally we still have to make sure that we do secure that. We really need to be runners-up. We shouldn't be third to anybody else. So Foden will get more game time. I can see Garcia getting game time, notwithstanding the imminent return of Laporte, thank goodness. But that then gives us the chance to free up Fernandinho to do his proper role and see how that rotates with Rodri. Harwood-Bellis, not so much, because obviously as we advance further into the cup competitions, it becomes ever more serious and we need to win silverware. And Tommy Doyle, maybe just a bit part player this season because, again, you know, these are real youngsters. These are 17-year-olds. You know, these are kids. These aren't even 18, 19. So I think Garcia and Foden will get more game time. Harwood-Bellis and Doyle probably just on the fringes.
And obviously the January transfer window is now open. Yep. Your thoughts, Dave, in terms of what City might do, or do you think limited activity and we'll wait for the summer?
Well, Pep's intimated it's unlikely to be an active January. I mean, as fans, it's always exciting to see new signings, especially as a City fan when United bought Sanchez, Fred and Maguire. But joking aside, I think they're going to see limited activity this window. One thing that worries me is Pep has been quoted as saying... we can't compete financially. Now, I don't know if that's linked to FFP or if that's just a bit of smoke and mirrors, but certainly the areas which we would look to reinforce during the summer, I would imagine, would be left back. But if Mendy stays fit and performs to his potential, we have world-class players, but that's two very big ifs. And I would imagine we'd be looking at Ben Chilwell, at Leicester, or even David Alaba at Bayern Munich. He's only 27, hugely experienced, obviously played for Pep for 3 years. Centre-back, again, notwithstanding the fact that Garcia is maturing, Otamendi, I presume, will go. So we have to be looking for a good, solid partner for Laporte. I've heard rumours that we might be in for Koulibaly at Napoli, possibly Skriniar, can't even say these names, at Inter Milan, both of which would give great strength and depth at centre-back. We've got the prospect of Leroy Sané possibly leaving. I think most City fans would love him to stay. But if he were to go, that would leave us short in attacking mode. So you're probably looking at Ousmane Dembele at Barcelona, or you've got the Real Sociedad winger, Oyarzabal, both 21 and 22, so the emphasis on youth again.
So just to jump in here, David, you know, when you're talking about some of the players who are available, I hear you mentioned David Alaba, and then you went on to players like Koulibaly, who I assume you're talking north of 100 million euros. You know, Skriniar into Milan are not going to let
quoted
cheap
for him, but that's paper talk, so I don't know.
De Laurentiis has been so difficult to get any players out of, you know, so far of Napoli, and, you know, Koulibaly signed a long deal recently, so it'll be difficult to do. But one name that has come up, mainly in the context of Arsenal, but could be a potential one player Pep knows well and a bit of a flashback for the Blues, is Jerome Boateng, who's apparently available for around 15 million. He's old, yeah, he's not the sort of model we'd usually go for. He's maybe a bit of a more difficult character, but Pep's managed him successfully and he'd be available cheaply. Do you think he would make an interesting fit?
Yeah, I think it would be an interesting acquisition, but not one that I would advocate. I mean, he's 31, he has been prone to injury himself. Bayern Munich wouldn't be looking to sell him if he was still in his prime. And does he bring anything to the party? Is he any better than a John Stones? I mean, Otamendi, bless him, he's done us proud for over the years, but I think his time is up during the summer. And I wouldn't see Boateng even as a January sticking plaster, because if Laporte's coming back, you've then got Laporte, you've got Stones, you've got Garcia, you have Fernandinho if you really have to use him there. But it would be nice to see Fernandinho utilised in his primary position, especially as we now push on for League Cup, FA Cup, and dare we even dream it, Champions League.
So, okay, I think that's persuasive, and I think if we're talking about where we have our full complement of players, that works well. But we've shown already we're one defensive injury away from looking a bit lean at the back, having to play Fernandinho there, you know, having to maybe bring Garcia through a little earlier than expected. It's maybe not ideal, but I'm interested in the Alaba rumor. What's your view on that, and how do you think he would link in, given that maybe we've seen Mendy playing a little bit more and a little bit better, and of course we've got Zinchenko and Angelino as potential backup.
I think with Mendy, as I said, if he was to stay fit and actually start performing as the Monaco player that he was, we've got a world class player. But as you say, he's an injury away. And that exposes us far too much. Angelino, nothing against the lad, but I can't see him making the grade, and I think he's limited at the very highest level. I always think Zinchenko's made a decent fist of a left-back, but lest we forget, he is not a left-back. And I think if David Alaba is available, he'd done 12 months to go. He'll be running his contract down once this summer arrives. He'll still only be, I think, 27. Very versatile, so he could cover in a number of positions. Pep had him for 3 years at Bayern Munich, and he is a world-class player, and I don't think he would be as expensive as Chilwell, because we've got Premier League inflated prices. But the one thing, obviously, City have to keep an eye on is making sure that our homegrown, you know, English quota is up to the mark.
Just before we go, David, and briefly, if you can, in terms of looking forward to the rest of the season then, if the Premier League's gone, is the Champions League essential that Pep wins that now?
I wouldn't say it's essential. It's hugely desirable, obviously, for Pep's CV, for City, for everything, because it's the one thing that's missing. It's the one thing that we're able to then throw back in the faces of everybody who always says that we're failures because we haven't won it. I think you said earlier in the day that Premier League is always desirable. Totally agree. Champions League is desirable to put it on the honours board, to stick it up UEFA where the sun doesn't shine, and to basically give us the full set. Whether we can do it, if Laporte's back on form, if Sané is still with us and playing, we have a full complement of a squad. then it's a cup competition, so anything goes. And I think we're capable on our day of beating anybody, but only time will tell.
Only time will tell when they face one of Europe's best, Real Madrid. David, always a pleasure to get you on. Happy New Year to you. David Walcott, red but never red there. Real pleasure when we get a chance to speak to David. We will speak to him, of course, at some point later in the season. But we have to do it. It's really unfortunate. But we're going to speak to a Man United fan. It is Ryan Butler, sports journalist at 7 Sport Next, to get his preview of the League Cup semi-final this week.
Love Sport.
That's right. It can only be the opposition view on Love Sport. And what a juicy one this is going to be on the Manchester City fan show on Love Sport Radio, because it is the Manchester Derby this week, the League Cup semi-final. These two teams faced each other the 7th of December. United got that result at the Etihad. This time it's Old Trafford. This time it's the League Cup semi-final. And I'm delighted to say we're joined by Ryan Butler, sports journalist for 7 Sport, and of course, a Man United fan. Ryan, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Being brave, coming on the Man City show, showing your face, showing your colours. Big, big game in the week. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer needs it, and what are you making of it?
Well, that is the million-dollar question. yeah, we're going into it with a great result at the Etihad, but you know, United have been so hot and cold and inconsistent this season, but yeah, it's the Manchester Derby. Anything can happen, and we've seen that in recent years, so I'm confident, but you know, it's going to be a tough old game. Aguero's back as well, so always a bit of fear around that.
And am I right in thinking that your injury woes deepen? Is Maguire out injured, or has he recovered, do you think? Is he going to play?
Well, it's one of those where you get smoke and mirrors all over it. Probably would have gone off as a bit of a precaution against Wolves, trying to get him fit for it. Personally, I'd like to see him play if he is fit. But at the same time, you know, it is only the first leg. It is the League Cup. United's league form needs a bit more improvement. Do you risk him? And that's what Solskjaer's got to do, really. I think he improves our defence enough to make him worth the risk. Especially, as I said, if Aguero's playing, then you need your best defenders on that pitch.
And in terms of league form, I know obviously that in a derby or in a cup semi-final, I guess you can say league form goes out the window here, Ryan, but there is a gulf in class between the two sides at the moment, of course. You've got the greatest manager on the planet in Pep, and obviously you've got Ollie, who took Cardiff down and are struggling as a manager of such a large club and as large standing as your team. There is a gulf in class. You can't see your team coming out winners over two legs, surely, can you? In this tie?
No, I don't think so.
Good for you, Ryan. I won't have Nigel scare Love Sports guests off. They'll never come back.
I mean, I could sit here and I could paint it into, you know, we won at the Etihad, we're probably going to do it again. But I've seen Man United too much over the last couple of years to know that, you know, you get two good games and then you get a bad one. You know, luckily, we've had a couple of bad ones. So maybe we are due a good game on Tuesday. But, you know, I think that Man City have had a bad month to 6 weeks, really. You know, Liverpool pulled away in the Premier League title race. Pep's probably under a little bit of pressure. You know, I'm going to stick the knife in a little bit. He's under a bit of pressure. He's got to deliver a trophy. You know, is the Champions League there for him? I don't know. But, you know, the League Cup, it's a great chance for whoever wins this tie. He's instantly the favourite to probably win the whole thing. So, you know, he's there for taking for both sides. As a United fan, I'd love to see us go for it. But at the same time, tomorrow night probably tells you everything you need to know. If United are still in it or can potentially be ahead going to the Etihad, then anything can happen. We played very, very well the other week. Can we replicate it? You know, Man City, are they going to buckle under the pressure? A lot of questions, and it makes it a bit more exciting than you know, the boring fixtures that you see sometimes throughout the years.
So, Ryan, doing what my shrink always tells me not to do and dwelling on past trauma, going back to the derby, you know, at the Etihad, where we were mercilessly dethroned, you know, what really struck me about that game is that I looked at the team sheets and thought, you know, Manchester United central midfield, you know, usually the area which we use to win the game, you know, looked very weak. But somehow Manchester United found a way around that completely, you know, with you know, really using, you know, Martial and, you know, Rashford and the pace that you have across your front three to, you know, really properly get at our defensive weaknesses. You know, I don't fully understand quite how you managed to so well, you know, neutralise our midfield strength, but how do you think Solskjaer's going to look to do that again, given that we now, you know, we're now very aware of what you can do with your pace and may try and counteract that? You know, what else has Solskjaer got up his sleeve to try and use the tactical gambit to stop us dominating midfield?
Well, without being too negative, if you see the recent performances United have chalked off, like the Arsenal away game, there is no what else he's got off his sleeve at the minute. You know, our midfield's going to be probably Nemanja Matic, Fred and Andreas Pereira, so I'm not very confident at all. You know, the front three are the front three, and if they get it right, it's going to be a long old night. But we tend to not be able to do it at Old Trafford as much. It's a formation and a system that has seen the better results come probably away from home. Yes, we play better in the bigger game, but you know, you're going to Old Trafford. You don't want to see United sitting on the back foot playing a counter-attacking game at home. I mean, I don't want to see it, and I don't think any of the United fans want to see it. But you know, as you said, the midfield is going to be the key battle. And too frequently, you look at the Arsenal game in particular, Mikel Arteta learnt from the game where United beat City before he's then obviously gone down to North London. And, you know, he learnt from that. He was prepared for that. And, you know, United and Solskjaer couldn't lay a glove on Arsenal. If City do that, it's going to be a long old night for me and every other United fan watching the game.
Well, Ryan, it doesn't bode well for my next question then. What is your score prediction for that League Cup first, the first leg semi-final?
I think United will score. I think, you know, for everything I'm saying, I do think that, you know, it is a derby game. It is always different. And, you know, even if you're going into it with bad form, the derby game could be the game to turn your form around. So I think it'll be a close, but I think City will shade it 2-1.
You're making friends on the City show, Ryan. We really appreciate you coming on.
Hey, I just want the invite back.
You are always invited, especially with score predictions like that, Ryan. Really good to chat to you. Ryan Butler there, sports journalist at Seven Sport and obviously Man United fan, but picking a City win. Guys, he went for the City win, saying they're going to shade it. City get revenge, obviously, after that league game. Nigel, what are you making of the contest?
Well, it's funny. I kind of agree with Ryan completely. I think
this is a turn up for the books.
Yeah, no. Well, I think they will score. I think we will concede, and I think it's going to be a close contest there. And I think City are going to win by the odd goal. So I actually had 2-1 down as well. So I'm agreeing with the scoreline as well with Ryan.
So obviously, it will make a bigger second leg because it will still be for both sides there to win it. David, what are you making of it?
I think we'll win the tie over two legs. I think we might, you know, weirdly, I always think we might struggle more at home against United because we've just got something at the moment that, you know, going to Old Trafford, we've been doing so well recently. Mm. I'm probably minded to say 3-1 City. I think we'll, you know, they'll get one inevitably because we can't defend. You know, they'll probably, if we go 2-1 up and, you know, they're pushing to try and score, you know, we can probably hit them on the counter quite nicely. So I'm feeling pretty positive.
And just very quickly, is Villa on the weekend? So let's get a quick prediction on that. And I've done the Aston Villa fan show earlier, as there are a lot of fan shows on Love Sport Radio. And literally, Ryan Pitcher just wrote it off. He just said, oh, it's a free hit. He went to see. He said, if we get 1-1, he said, the lottery's up, the numbers are up, so we'll be pleased. Not giving Villa much chance, but their form's really indifferent. What are you two making very quickly on this one?
Yeah, quickly on that, I think we've got a bit of a break. It's not till Sunday, of course, so it's plenty of break. I think City will run out 4-1 winners there.
Yeah, too strong for Villa, although they are showing a little bit, but they're not consistently showing it, David. But do you agree with Nigel's view?
I think we'll win. Maybe that's one where we will be able to defend it out. I think Grealish is a quality player, and I think he's got the capacity to unlock the defence well. But I've been very impressed with their striker earlier this season. He's now out for the season. You've got Tom Heaton, of course, who's injured as well. So there's a little bit of a few blows that they've taken over the last couple of weeks. So I'm kind of thinking it's probably more likely to... Yeah, I can see us coming away 3-0 winners there, actually.
Yeah, strong wins against Man United and Villa on the weekend. City obviously having a strong, maybe second half of the season. We'll look towards that Real Madrid game when Europe is back in February, but this has been the Manchester City Fan Show, the first one of the year. We will be here at the same time as we are every week, every Monday, every 9 o'clock for all of your City news with Nigel Rothband and David Hodgson. We will see you next week.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.